Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I am Michael Calori, a senior editor at Wired. Lauren Good is off again this week. Normally, I'd be super lonely, crying into my artisanal kombucha. But luckily, I am joined by two writers from Wired's reviews team, senior writer Adrian So and staff writer Parker Hall. Say hello, you two.
Hey.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, guys. So this week, we are talking about e-bikes, you know, electric bicycles. They've come a long way in the last few years. Today's e-bikes are more powerful, more elegant, the designs have improved, they're lighter and easier to maneuver. Also, battery technology continues to get better and better, so e-bikes can go for miles and miles before conking out. If you live in a city or even near one, they also have the potential to completely change the way that humans move around, zipping between home and work and school on two wheels instead of four. At least that's the idea once the world opens up again. So later in the show, we're going to offer some tips on how to navigate the e-bike world if you're curious about buying one. But first, let's talk about the growing trend towards powered cycling, as I like to call it. Now, Adrian and Parker, both of you have ridden and reviewed many, many electronic bicycles for Wired. So I want to start with you, Adrian. How did you get into e-bikes?
So I first started getting interested in e-bikes because I take my kids, they're 3 and 5 now, and I take them to school, or I did when schools were open. I took them in a bike trailer, and hauling like two kids and two bags on a Thule bike trailer on my underpowered, my analog bike or whatever, it was just so painfully slow, and I have to cross this one road, and my husband was genuinely afraid that like some 18-wheeler would just come barreling towards us, and I'd be like totally unable to move, or like the axle would fall out on my like 10-year-old Surly or something. And so about like a couple of years before I started reviewing e-bikes, he just started like hinting really strongly, like, maybe you need a motor because you're too weak and too slow. So if you're going to keep doing this, you definitely need some help. So that's how I kind of got into it. What about you, Parker?
I actually got into it out of sheer laziness. I used to work in downtown Portland, and I had about a 3-mile commute. And the train took about half an hour, but biking took 20 minutes. And there's a big hill on the way home, and I got too lazy to analog bike it anymore. So I discovered e-bikes existed, and I got one, and I never looked back. So I actually came at reviewing them sort of having already bought one for myself.
You know, I think that's one of the things, like Parker, what you were talking about, and also Adrian, your story, that's one of the things that have proven to be a real boon for e-bikes, is that people who otherwise would not have considered it get into it just because cycling for them, like the things they have to do during the day, are just a little bit too much for a non-electric bike, an acoustic bike or an analog bike, whatever we're calling them.
Bike, I like that.
We can just call them bicycles, right? Like
bicycles,
human-powered bicycles. Like, if your commute's like 4 miles or 5 miles, maybe that's a little bit too far for you to ride a bike because you're not, you know, maybe super in shape, or you don't feel like you're in shape, or there's a big hill right in the middle of it. And like an e-bike is a thing that sort of gets you over that hump, I feel like.
Yeah. And it's also, at least it was amazing for me because you don't have to bring a change of clothes. So, you know, if you're analog biking to work and it's, you know, over 3 or 4 miles, you're definitely going to have to pack a change of clothes, at least if you sweat as much as I do. but on an e-bike, it's great. You can just wear your normal outfit, bundle up a little bit more, and you're good to go.
That's something that I think about a lot with e-bikes, is that a lot of the people who are interested in e-bikes are kind of already bikers to begin with. Like I think all of us we were already the kinds of people who would use our analog human powered bikes around. So I've been kind of thinking about that as we're reviewing bikes, is how do you get people who might have been taking transportation or a car onto a bike in the first place. So that's kind of something I've been keeping in mind as I'm reviewing bikes too.
You know, these things also used to be really clunky. So maybe someone tried one a few years ago and didn't like it just because it was sort of like a tank. But the design has gotten a lot cleaner over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I also think that they ride more and more like real bikes. I think some of the first e-bikes that I ever saw were sort of rear hub motor. You know, there's a motor on the rear wheel, and the actual drivetrain of the bike isn't really directly connected to the actual motor that's powering the wheel. And as, you know, Bosch and these companies have started making mid-drive bikes where the motor's in the middle of the bike and sort of works with your pedaling, it feels a lot more natural. So, you know, if you haven't ridden an e-bike in a while, sort of the new generation, the new style of e-bikes definitely feel a lot more like the bikes you're used to riding, in my opinion.
Definitely. And they've gotten so much lighter. Electric bicycles have dropped 20 pounds since I first started reviewing them in 2017 or 2018. Now when I get a 65 pound commuter bike, I'm like, what is this? Is this 2018? Like, this is just way too heavy. They've gotten so much better so quickly. It's amazing.
To me, the big design innovation is getting the battery into the frame. You know, like there was something that really turned me off of e-bike design just a couple of years ago, you know, like the big brick battery sitting on the down tube of the bike, which is like the tube that sort of diagonally goes between the handlebars and where the pedals are. It just looks like, you know, somebody took a mountain bike frame and just clomped a big sort of brick onto it. Now there are bike designs where the battery is completely integrated inside the frame. So maybe the frame is a little bit thicker, but it hides the battery. And that gives it not only like a cleaner look, but it helps with sort of the weight management of the bike as you're riding it. You know, your knees don't knock against it. And it's a little bit easier to balance because the weight is sort of distributed more naturally.
Yeah.
It helps with theft too. Like when I used to like bike to a bar back when we had bars, I'd have to use the key and take the battery off the bike to try to, you know, help people not leave my bike alone. And now if it's just hidden in the down tube, it's so much less conspicuous. It's awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I think I wasn't ever so much worried about someone stealing a giant battery that really doesn't go to anything, but more that your bike is so easily identifiable as an e-bike when there's just a big battery strapped to it, and immediately people think like, oh, that's an expensive thing to steal. So I do definitely really like this trend towards making e-bikes look just like every other bike on the road. It's really awesome.
That's something to think about too. I know that a lot of people are like, why would I spend, you know, there's such huge variation with e-bike prices and components right now. And especially if you're looking at a bike with that has a battery that's in the tube, like it's worth spending a little bit more money to get a battery that's going to keep its charge longer. And, you know, during recharging cycles, that way you don't have to replace the battery in the mid-drive tube or in the down tube. So that's something that I think about too.
Speaking of cost, the prices have been coming down considerably over the last couple of years as well. Where are we now with e-bike prices?
I would say that you can get a very good quality e-bike now for about $2,000. I think below that is where you get to sort of direct to consumer companies and companies that where you're going to have to put together the bike and it's shipped directly to you. And while we've tested a couple of those bikes that we actually like more recently, a lot of those just don't have the same sort of quality components that you might want in a bike that's going to be going pretty fast on the road and dealing with a lot of sort of torque and other forces.
Yeah, like over 20 miles per hour usually.
Yeah. And that's something, I mean, Adrian kind of touched on it already, but I just really think I agree with her that going with a bike that has name brand components, you know, things like Shimano or Bosch or big name brand bike part makers is usually a better sign for the bike overall. Because you might spend a little extra money, but that stuff has really been tested by, you know, hardcore, usually mountain bikers all over the place. So it's more durable.
Yeah. And I had one thing about that I wanted to say about DTC is that if you like, especially with cheaper components, that bikes are for real. They're not toys. I had an actual I was assembling a DTC bike that will go unnamed in this segment. And it arced on me when I tried to plug the battery into the computer. Electrical current jumped from one cable to the other. That's a lot of power. If it had gone through my body instead of through the air, it might have stopped my heart. So that's another thing to keep in mind if you're going for cheaper components is that they don't always have the support and quality control that you might want for staying alive. So
yeah, big yikes. I'm glad you're still here with us, Adrian.
I assemble your bike outside so you stay grounded.
Or honestly, have a professional assemble it.
Yeah, that too.
I think that's the best method. I never can get my brakes to not rub unless I take it to an actual bike shop.
Well, let's take a break right now. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about some tips for people who might be considering buying an e-bike.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the Reviews Director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
Okay, welcome back. Getting into e-bikes might seem daunting, but it doesn't have to be. For starters, we have a great guide to all the best e-bikes on wired.com, which you should definitely go read. And also, we're going to offer up some advice on this show. So whether you're brand new to bikes in general, or just e-bikes, or you're a seasoned vet in the world of acoustic cycling, we'll do our best to help you get moving. Parker, I want to start with you. What's something that you wish people had told you before you rode your first e-bike?
So the main thing that I think of is that I wish someone had told me to get a little bit bigger, sort of more robust of a bike than I otherwise maybe would have bought. I think the beauty of e-bikes is that they have a lot more power. And so you can get something with a little fatter wheels. You can get something with shocks. You can get something that can hold a week's worth of groceries. And you don't really have to worry so much about being sleek because the power will be there.
Yeah, that's something that Parker and I have talked about before is frame size. We reviewed one bike, the Propella, which can fit both me, who's 5'2", and Parker, who's 6'2". With acoustic cycles, they have to be fitted to you really well because you're using your own body power to move, and that can put strain on, you know, your legs or your shoulders. But with an e-bike, you know, the battery is doing the biking for you, so you can play a little fast and loose with the frame sizes more so than you would with an acoustic bike.
Yeah, and the battery is doing most of the work for you. Like, you're still putting in some work, so it's important to get something that, you know, matches you a little bit, but you don't have to get as picky about size.
Yeah, definitely. I'm testing an acoustic gravel bike right now, and you have to just get so much more finicky with the stem height and like the seat height and all these things. I was at the trailhead and I completely forgot that you're supposed to carry a bike tool to tinker with all these things when you go out, because I'm so used to being on an e-bike now with like my knees pulled up to my chin or my arms like over, like it doesn't even matter. It does matter. It matters a lot less on an e-bike than it does if you're going for a 20-mile gravel ride.
That's true. And another thing I would say is, along with frame size, one thing that I really would consider that sort of supplements frame thoughts, you know, like with regular bikes, you think a lot about frame size and wanting it to be perfect for your power delivery. On an e-bike, you really want to get a bike that's powerful enough for what you're going to be using it for. So a standard 250-watt motor is probably fine if you live somewhere that's pretty flat. And, you know, you're trying to go sort of normal flat places that are easy to get to with maybe a hill or two in between. But if you live in San Francisco or if you live somewhere where you're going to really be tackling big hills, you definitely want to consider getting a more powerful bike. You'll never regret having too much power, but you will regret having not enough.
Right. And, you know, that's just carrying you. But the trend that we're seeing, especially in cities, is people investing in e-bikes as a full-on car replacement. I guess this is more for you, Adrian, because you carry your kids around when you test these things. But what are some of the things that are important to look for when you're buying an e-bike to move your whole family around?
What Parker said is true. I would definitely invest in a bigger battery, a more powerful motor. Let's see. Yeah, there are some hills around our neighborhood that our top family e-bike, the Urban Family Aero, it has a feature that I really like, which is the continuously variable and Enviolo shifters, which means, it means that normally when you're riding a bike, you have to be moving to change the gears. But with the Enviolo shifters, you can shift while you're standing still and be on a lower gear when you're going uphill, which is something that you kind of really need when you've got about 300 pounds of bike and person and kid. You really don't want to be like, you have your normal typical uphill biker experience with like handlebars wobbling and you're like your 5-year-old screaming for her life. Like, that is something that I am pretty careful about. You want a bigger battery, good uphill shifters, and you'll probably need a couple of different accessories. I've had to change out accessories as my kids have grown too. Like they were, first they were in like the Thule maxi seat, and then they were on the seat pads with the monkey bars. So
oh, the monkey bars are rad.
They're so cool. I wish I could ride them. I wish I could ride there too. My husband's just going to have to pedal me around.
I think another thing with e-bikes is it's actually, in my opinion, kind of all about the accessories and the built-in accessories. I really like bikes that have built-in racks. I really like bikes that have built-in lights. It's amazing when you never have to recharge lights again because you have a giant battery powering your bike.
That's like the main, that's like the best part about having a bike with a battery in it. It's just like when I get an e-bike without built-in lights, I'm like, why? Why?
Yeah, yeah. It's such an easy thing to add. Come on. And fenders. That's another thing to think about. People who don't, you know, if you're already a cyclist, you know this. But if you're not coming from the cycling world, you definitely want to prepare for the worst weather. So I recommend fenders. I recommend a rack for holding things. You never know when you want to, you know, throw a bag of groceries on the back and go home. Your bike might not look as cool, but that's kind of the best part of e-bikes is that there's tons of cool accessories that can make all parts of your cycling journey so much easier.
Yeah, definitely. If you have kids on an e-bike, I also recommend a front basket. They have like these really cool floating front baskets now that are attached to a different part of the frame. So they don't throw, they're not like right on the handlebars. They don't throw your weight off when you're steering. Yeah, that's one of my favorite new accessories to have come out in the last year or so.
Yeah, when you turn, normally like a basket, when you turn the handlebars, the basket moves with the handlebars, but these, the basket stays put and it stays facing forward, which is like the first 10 minutes that you're on one of those, it's really disorienting.
Yeah, it is. Like, or like my eyes crossed or something, but no, it's just magic.
So when people are shopping for e-bikes, they often encounter statements about range, right? Like how far can the bike go on a charge? So what's a good way for people to sort of calculate how much range they should be looking for in an e-bike if they're considering getting one?
Oh my God, Parker, have you done any of these like on these like, oh my, there are so many online tools for range calculation and they are all like, it's just completely bonkers depending on where you live and how much you're carrying and what terrain you're going through. Like I have an online range calculator built into the Radwagon, one of the Radwagons that I have now. And on one single ride in a grocery trip, it can estimates my range is like 5 miles, 40 miles, 5 miles, 40 miles.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I would say it really depends on weather. You know, if it's cold, it's going to be a lot less efficient. It also really depends on power. If you're going to be having it all on, you know, if you're riding in turbo mode and going 28 miles an hour all the time, expect to get, in my experience, at or below the manufacturer's low range. I mean, so manufacturers typically give you a range. In my experience, they'll say like this e-bike goes between 25 and 45 miles. And in my experience, you're never going to get the 45. And if you ride it really hard, you might not even get the 25. So I would just say err on the side of caution in terms of range. Get a bigger battery if you're worried about range.
And a lot of bikes have, there's a option for a battery extender. So if I would say if your commute is longer than 10 miles, it might be worth keeping an extra battery, an extra charger at work, because you never know what's gonna happen on a bike. It's an adventure.
Yeah, true.
So all three of us have been testing e-bikes for, you know, the whole time we've been at Wired, and we're always evangelizing them. We're always talking about how much fun they are and how great they are for, you know, people who are looking for that experience. But in what I've found is that the biggest hurdle that I hear from people, the biggest sticking point that I hear from people is that they just don't feel safe riding a bike around a city. And that's not really something that we can change. And it really kind of depends on where you live. But it is true that in this country, in the United States, we have an infrastructure problem where we value cars on the road more so than we value bikes and pedestrians on the road. Is this something that is like that e-bikes are going to help? Is it easier to overlook infrastructure problems if you can go as fast as cars? Or is it just something that is like going to affect all cyclists, no matter what kind of ride they're on.
Yeah. If I want to say we live in Portland, and it has one of the most bike friendly infrastructures in the world with so many bike shops and facilities. And even here, it can be really frustrating and scary. There's one bike shop where if I pick up a giant bike, you have to go up this highway with like 18 wheelers coming at you. And it's just, I mean, in general, I find it really, I mean, this is an experience we all have in common. I find the lack of bike infrastructure to be really frustrating. A really cool development that happened this summer was Portland blocked off a bunch of slow streets that made biking and electric biking in particular, a lot easier.
We had that happen here in San Francisco also. Actually, the street that I live on is technically a slow street. It hasn't really done much to keep cars from going slow, but it has given people who want to go for a bike ride another place to do it where they don't feel constrained by the strips of paint on the bike lane. And it's still like, I see a good thing happening, which is that like now that cities have adopted slow streets, I know they're in New York, they're in Chicago, other big cities around the US, people have experienced what it's like to have that in their community. And when the pandemic is over and we're living in like post-pandemic America, those types of infrastructure changes are probably going to get more priority, because people have experienced them and people have, you know, enjoyed them, and they don't want to lose that. And also those who may have been against it have realized through demonstration that they don't really have that much of an argument against them anymore. You know what I mean?
Especially because one of the best ways to socialize this summer was outside. Like, I got so many more invitations to go on bike rides with friends this summer because it was one of the few, you know, safe distanced ways you could see everyone. So that was a really great thing to come about in a really sad way.
Yeah, I think the pandemic has really caused a massive growth in cycling in general, and definitely e-bikes. And one thing that's good about getting more cyclists out on the road is that, you know, sort of the more the safer, and hopefully also that will lead cities to build infrastructure that will benefit all cyclists.
Right. You know, people often criticize e-bikes as like, those are just wussies who don't want to put in the work of like pedaling an actual bicycle. But I think that's just absolutely the wrong argument. I think e-bikes are great because, like you said, Parker, it gets more people out on the road, right? More bikes out on the road, more people, strength in numbers. It allows us to have the sort of cycling utopia that we all as cyclists dream of on our city streets.
One of the bike shop owners that I talked to, he said that one of the biggest customer demographic he has are like older guys in their 50s and 60s who have been road biking their whole life. And as their like hips or like knees like start to get a little bit creaky, they can't quite keep up with their crews anymore, but they don't want to let them go because that's their main source of, you know, like social and physical activity. So you just get an e-bike and then you can just keep up with your friends. And I think that's totally awesome.
Yeah, accessibility is such a cool thing that e-bikes enable. And I think, you know, I've heard stories of people recovering from cancer treatment who are riding e-bikes instead of their normal bikes, you know, all sorts of people with physical disabilities that, you know, made it so that it wasn't really effective for them to ride a normal style traditional bike. I think that's, you know, it is an interesting thing because, you know, you feel some judgment sometimes riding e-bikes past these lycra clad cyclists. But what's funny is it's worth noting that if you're a regular cyclist who's been against e-bikes, you know, a lot of people have reasons they need to ride those bikes, and it's not necessarily worth judging people just by, you know, just because they're riding by you in their work clothes and you're struggling up the hill.
I'm such a bad mountain biker that when we would go out for rides, my husband would have to bike to the top of the hill, run back down, find me halfway up and carry my bike up for me, like so that we could get home before dinner time. But now what's harder, that or just getting a motor. Like, like all I want, like, I just want to hang out with my friends. God damn it.
All right. Well, thanks for the discussion, guys. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll have our recommendations.
I'm Reid Hoffman.
And I'm Aria Finger.
If you're interested in learning about how technology and humanity can come together to make a better future, then Possible is for you. We invite ambitious builders and deep thinkers like Trevor Noah, Kara Swisher, Sam Altman, and so many more. Help us sketch out the brightest version of the future and what it will take to get there.
If you want to be part of the future today, then subscribe to Possible wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, here comes the last segment of the show. Adrian, you go first. What's your recommendation?
My recommendation is a sun lamp. I live in Oregon, and it's been raining pretty steadily for a month now. And it's just, I had one before. I didn't really need as much mood lifting as I do this winter in particular. And it's just been a godsend. I just put it on for like 20 minutes while responding to emails in the morning. And yeah.
That's awesome. No, this is not like a, like an alarm clock, like a sunrise wake up alarm clock, right?
No, this is like, I mean, this is like the 10,000 lux, a 10,000 lux Verilux. I think it has to be a certain level of brightness to mimic sunlight effectively. So, and it has to be shining into your face. Like you can't have it just like, you know, on the back of your neck or something. So I have it like on a book by my computer for maximum efficacy. And I think it's working. I sound pretty peppy now.
That's awesome. Parker, what is your recommendation for our listeners?
I have been playing a lot of guitar during quarantine, and I've been trying to write better songs. And I discovered this trio of new albums, new old albums, I should say, by one of my favorite songwriters, Gillian Welsh. Basically, she recorded these songs in 2002 to finish a publishing contract so that she could, I don't know, write or record more music. But it's dozens of songs that she recorded over, I believe, just about a weekend in Nashville in 2002. They're spectacular. A lot of them were done in one or two takes, and it's just so impressive how amazing she's able to record her music that quickly.
And these are on like Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, etc.?
Yeah, they've been coming out. There's three volumes, and the third one was just released, I believe, a couple weeks ago. So you can check out all three. They're on all major streaming services.
Nice. So I'm going to recommend a game. It's a smartphone game. It's called Prune, P-R-U-N-E, and it's not about the fruit. It's Prune the Verb. This is a game that is like a touchy, swipey game where you're trying to grow a sprout out of the ground into a tree that can blossom. And in order for it to blossom, it has to hit the beam of light that is somewhere on the game board. So you kind of have to like prune the tree to get it to grow into a certain direction and to grow a certain length so that it'll hit the beam of light. Once it hits the beam of light, it will sprout flowers. And if you've gotten it far enough into the beam of light, it will sprout enough flowers in order for you to advance to the next level. So it's kind of a puzzle game, and it's beautifully designed. It's like a meditative, it's inspired by bonsai gardening. So everything, the design of it is very Japanese, and it has sort of that like that Zen quality that you get from, you know, tending to your bonsai tree, except it's all sort of virtual tree pruning.
Oh my God, Mike, I've been so into like these gentle meditative phone games since quarantine happened. Like that one sounds totally awesome. And then there's the New York Times has a couple of those like different like gentle games. I think the one I'm obsessed with right now is Tile. You just Have you played that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. I'm just like, oh, like so blue, so matching. So it's awesome. I'm going to have to check out Prune too.
I think Prune was actually featured in that New York Times meditative games roundup that you're talking about. I think it was in there. It's jumped up in the App Store and in the Google Play Store over the last couple of days because of it, I think.
Nice. The other meditative game I just started was Kentucky Route Zero on the Switch. Have you guys played that one?
No.
Mm-mm.
I think you might like it, actually. Like, I forget who did the music for it, but it's some like country music luminaries or something. And it's just like a storytelling game that started out on PC. So it's just like this gentle truck driver, Conway, like playing country music and going through like this Kentucky landscape with his dog. You can name the dog. I named the dog Blue. Like, it's so like, I'm not sure if it's going to end in a good way, but for now it's soothing. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that if you're interested in playing Prune, it's $4 and you can get it on Android or iOS. I don't know about the Switch game, but
I know. Well, the Switch game is like 25, but I'm definitely going to have to check Prune out.
Awesome. All right. Well, that is our show for this week. Thanks to Adrian So and Parker Hall for joining us. Thanks, guys.
No problem.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you all for listening. I should tell you that we are off next week. It's American Thanksgiving, the last week of November, so we are not going to be here. But Lauren Good and I will be back with a new episode on Friday, December 4th. Until then, if you have any feedback, you can find all of us on Twitter. Just check the show notes. This show is produced by Boone Ashworth, who is a joy to work with. Goodbye. We'll see you on December 4th.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Click here every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
From PR.